Hey, tourpreneurs, it's Mitch Bach, and just a quick note before we begin today's episode. Tourpreneur is currently sponsored by Google. We're thankful for their support of our community, and we are offering with them a completely free course helping you unlock the power and potential of Google's Things to Do program, which is specifically helping tour operators add their tours to Google in new ways that gives you new exposure and more direct bookings. To learn more, go to tourpreneur.com/Google. And as always, show notes, more resources, links to our newsletter, our business coaching community, and so much more are available on tourpreneur.com. Now to the episode.
Good afternoon to another episode of Tourpreneur Podcast. Today, we're starting a brand new series for 2024. This series is all about opportunity and challenges. What opportunities and what challenges are tourpreneurs facing in 2024 and beyond? Who better to discuss this with than the 100 tour operators that way back in September 22 invested a grand each, all 100 of them, into myself, Chris, and Mitch to form up the Tourpreneur community to take it away from just being a podcast and make it much more about a business, education, coaching, and delivering on our core mission, which is making tour operators more profitable. So over the next 10, 12 months, I'll be interviewing all of our 100 founders to find out where they are with their business and what are the biggest opportunities and challenges they're seeing in 2024 and 2025 and beyond. I emphasize 25 as well as 24. I know everybody's focused on 24, but many of our founder members are multi-day operators and they're already planning and booking and getting bookings for 2025. So welcome. I'd like to introduce Sean from Tailormade Tours in Ireland, Luska from Rewind Dubrovnik, and Eden from Meet Bosnia Tours. It's in the name. It's Bosnia. Welcome, everyone.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you for having us.
So let's kick off with some challenges rather than opportunities, and we'll keep the opportunities to lay. Luska, you're in my top right, so let's kick off. What challenges have you got for 2024 and 2025?
2024 is first challenge is our new investment to an asset, quite a big investment to a luxurious speedboat, and keeping the numbers working and getting it in front of all of our B2B partners. That's the first challenge.
So why is it a challenge? Because all you've told me there is you're buying a new speedboat. Why is that a challenge?
You know, it's always the risk there, right? So to buy, it's quite a big investment, and there's always a risk of something happening, I guess, in the world or some things that we cannot control, but trying to sell it as much and make numbers work, right? We need 100 days of the boat going out to be profitable.
And I have the word sneaked in there, luxurious, and luxury and boat going together normally means expensive in my head.
Yep. So
we're spending a lot of money here on a capital asset that you mentioned, 100 days utilization. Why 100 days?
It's 50 and something days to cover the costs for the whole year and be on a zero. Everything above 50 day tours with that boat will be profit. So 100 was, it's on the calculation.
Why did you mention 100 days? The year's got 365 days on it?
Yeah, that's the seasonality. Yes, we are in the challenge is it's not summer all year round, and it's not right. Day out on water all year round. Yeah.
So you have the challenge that virtually everybody in our community has, the challenge of seasonality. Some have it. Some operators have it more than others. I know you're in Dubrovnik. I've been out there and seen you. So your destination is very seasonal because you don't get tourists coming in at the winter.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. Even if you did get them coming in, is boat tours something they would do in the winter?
Snorkeling side, and you know, the summer activities, no, but there is a switch opportunity there for a second. Is the islands are full of people living there and stuff to do, so not necessarily they need to swim, but there is stuff to do on the islands around Dubrovnik, definitely.
Within our community, obviously we have nearly just under 12,000 tour operators in our community now. Combined between them is nearly 3 billion worth of revenue. There's a huge mix between operators that have assets, and assets drive the business. And in this case, the asset is a boat. And we have a lot of operators that are asset light, whereas they don't have an asset of equipment or a lodge or a building or boats or buses. They're doing tours that the asset is the guide and the guides only, and it's about the information, the culture, the experience that the guys turn up around, maybe some food is the asset. So it's a very distinct, different business model between asset-driven and non-asset-driven. And non-asset-driven has a lot more intangibles in it. Asset-driven has intangibles as well. Non-asset has more intangibles. Could you just speak a bit more about the challenges of running an asset-driven business?
Yeah, it's all the maintenance that comes with it. And in past few years, there was a issue with getting parts of the boats. So, we waited for some of the parts for even 2 weeks to get essential parts, not something that you can run to or without it. And of course, the financing of the assets and availability of stuff. If you want to grow, and since COVID, it was really, really hard to get extra boats or anything else.
So you have a restriction on your business there because you're asset-based, because once those boat seats are filled, that is your day full. It's really hard to grow your business once your boat's filled, and then you've got that paradox of you don't want to buy more boats because they're only operating 100 days a year, therefore they're sitting out for 265 days a year, and they're expensive assets, which can very quickly get into the multi-millions if you have a fleet of 6-7 of these boats. So it's a very challenging business model. What means, to me anyway, that when you're in season, these assets need to be working flat out as many hours of the day as possible at the best yield possible to deliver. So
correct, yes.
It sounds like you're pretty confident, though, because you're about to spend a lot of money on a new flash luxury boat. So good luck. Eden, in Bosnia, let's talk about your challenges. What challenge do you see coming for 2024 and 2025?
Well, I'm assets driven company like Luxa is, you know, so I have a fleet of cars and minivans, minibuses, and all these kind of things. And well, I don't see honestly that as big challenge in a way that it works quite fine. The biggest challenge is where to park all of that. So we have been working on it in the past couple of months. So we just want that to be close to our office, to be ready, you know, and so the guides can come and they can pick up the car. They can just do tours as quickly as possible. Challenges that I see is mainly delivering idea to the staff and trying to rise your thoughts among your team. That's the thing that really is something that's driving me, and I see them that they are happy to get something new, to learn. And of course, that's my challenge, because what I learned from you guys, what I learned from Chris, Mitch, Pete, what I learned from Matt in the last couple of months and on our podcasts, on our Seville community meetup. Oh, I don't think I can do it all in 2024. So I started fast. I started as of October. I was bringing technology in my business. But again, you know, I'm not the one who drives all these operations. So I know how it should be, but I need my team to understand that this is going to help them. Because if something doesn't work with technology, I think that my challenge is that sometimes I see that maybe they don't understand that there is a solution within the technology. You know, so to speed up all the operations, I don't want everything to be completely automatic and automated, but a lot of these things can be automated. So that's the thing that I find as a challenge. But I'm always happy, you know, to deal with challenges, to work hard, and to make our business the best possible tour operator, which completely uses technology in the operations, but we are not losing in any sense our human touch. Yeah, that's
you raised several points there, and I'll try and address them, not in order, in random, because that's the way my brain works all over the place. So the one of taking in lots and lots of information, try and make it all happen, and there's no way you're going to make it happen in 2024.
Yeah.
Don't beat yourself up about that. Right? Tour operating is not a sprint. It's not even a medium distance race. Tour operating is an ultramarathon. Not a marathon, it's an ultramarathon. Right? It's about consistent improvement year after year after year after year. And with the speed of the world changing and the way technology is changing, the way the customers are changing, it's very easy for operators to get drowned in trying to do too many things in a set period of time. And what normally happens is they made a half arse of doing them all, rather than picking one or two things, and I'm saying one or two, making them your number one and your number two priority, and really, really delivering on them. Hopefully you've looked at all the things you need to do. It might be a list of 10, 15, 20. You've gone through a prioritization with you and your team, and then you've got one or two. Right? And you deliver on the one or two because that brings confidence into the team. Mm-hmm. That brings confidence into the team that you, the leader, identified everything we need to do. He's not pressurized us to do 15 things. He's given us one to two things, explained why they're so important to achieve and what they're going to get. And then you deliver on them. And when you do that, when you do the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth, and when you work through this, the team becomes more confident in there than doing that. Coming on your other point, your team and motivating them and training them. And I was guilty of this all the time I was operating. Right? We underestimate how much training even small teams need. Right? And it's not getting better, it's getting worse. I don't know why it's getting worse. It's a society thing, age, all the rest of it. But people want responsibility and they want independence of action. But when you give them that, they're not very good at doing anything with it. Therefore, as a leader of a company, you have to take responsibility and train them. And training is a thing that pays back time and time and time again. The better trained the team is, the more they're going to work. Yes, you're going to spend a lot of time and money and train people, and they're going to leave and work for someone else. That is part of life. But the better the training is, the better the investment is in your people, the longer they're going to reward the company, the easier is going to be with new projects and new technology and new anything that you're doing. And as we move into a world of new all the frigging time, because everything's changing, you're going to have to create teams that are very agile, willing to say, well, that worked last year, but it's not working this year. We need to do this year. Because that's just, we've not got a choice about that. That's just the reality of the situation we're in. Things are changing all the time. Technology is always a difficult one with teams. People get used to using tech that they like and they like doing. So if you're changing tech or introducing new tech, it's always a hard one to do. You really have to go through all the reasons with the team and get the buy-in of why they're doing it. Otherwise, people have a bad habit of putting barriers in just because they don't like something. And they'll start not using it and say it's rubbish because of X, Y, Z, because they don't really understand the full outgoing of it. But again, like I said, this is an ultramarathon. Training of teams, keeping teams motivated, focused, is also an ultramarathon. That never goes away. You need several people in the team who are your core lieutenants that are going to drive the rest of the people on your team. And it's all about buy-in. And if your average tour operator in the community who's got a team, the CEO or the boss, the manager, whatever you want to call him, he's got two roles, right? Growing the business profitably and keeping the team motivated and happy, right? If he or she does them two roles, most of the other stuff will take care of itself.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I mean, I try to set several goals for this year. And of course, my goal is aligned with our multi-day tours. And we try to set fixed departures. And we are already started gathering some bookings, even though we started something in a short time. You know, like we started selling multi-day tours several months in advance. We are expecting more by the autumn 2024, and our tours are there. So we have been working on it, and yeah, on several things. Yeah, but mainly multi-day tours, yeah, self-guided tours, and technology. Yeah,
you did the right thing, because I can remember you speaking to us about your multi-day tours. You decided you were going to do it, and you launched quickly. I mean, time and time again, I speak to operators who have spent 6 months, 7 months, a year longer building an experience before they take it to market. Get it to market quickly, as quick as you can. It doesn't need to be perfect. Get it to market and find out if the market likes it. Because if the market's not buying it, there is an issue. So there's no point developing something for 6 months, 7 months and finding out if the market's not buying, particularly in multi-day, when you can put the start date, if you take it to market in January, the first tour can be the 1st of June. So you find out if people are buying, and then if they're buying, well, then you run very quickly to get all the things in place to make that tour happen. But I've never found a tour operator can't deliver on doing that. If they've got bookings coming in, they suddenly get very motivated and they make the thing happen. Again, in the community, what's a normal thing is to build a tour, spend time, money, effort, often for months, take it to market and find out the market's no interested in it. We don't dictate what the customer likes. The customer dictates what they like.
Yes, you're right. I think that we should be, in this kind of time we live in, we should be ready to adapt quickly to the market. So that's, you know, it's changing day to day. If you are not there, if you are not ready, you are losing time, I think.
Yeah. So, Sean from sunny Ireland, even sunnier than sunny Scotland.
Just about, yeah.
Yeah. What's your challenges for 2024-25, or one of your challenges?
Okay, so I guess I feel my main challenge at the moment is maintaining service quality and responsiveness to our clients, who are primarily B2B travel agencies and tour operators, because I feel like the complexities of our products are growing in logistically and in terms of suppliers. What I mean by that is we're getting more supply constraints, less accommodation, more rooms unavailable. We may have to go to a second, third, fourth choice accommodations in certain towns, multiple transfers. And I feel we're taking an increased time to fulfill booking requests. So I'm kind of feeling that, yeah, I'm not delivering the quality and the responsiveness that they may be expect or have experienced in the past couple of years. And given that I come from a technology process development background, I feel I should know this. I do know this, but I feel like there's so many requests coming in. They're more complex. They're maybe more custom. They want different things. So kind of overloaded. And I feel like I've taken on this business in the last 10 months ago. And I feel like the improvements that I know need to be made aren't being made.
So just for our listeners, so we're all clear, correct me if I'm wrong, Sean, you're selling B2B to other tour operators who are then retailing your product.
Yes, and it's multi-day, so anything from 7 to 12 days, kind of hiking from point to point. And the challenge is there's less supply of guest houses. Other guest houses mid-season are turning to minimum of two nights, where there used to be one night minimum. Their costs are increasing. My prices are set once a year in agreement with their B2B partner, so I can't really up the prices in mid-season. So all those kind of issues are kind of compounding each other. And I feel like, yeah, I should be turning around a booking request in one day or 2 days is 3 or 4 or 5 days.
Yeah. And actually, when your clients are out, they're not guided, are they? Or are they guided?
Self-guided.
So unless you get this quality at the planning stage spot on, there is a risk of not good quality at the front end, not just your B2B partner waiting on a reply, but also at the front end from the end consumer's point of view.
Yeah, I feel like also the preparatory work that has to go in and making sure the transfers are booked, the specific notes that are compiled and distributed, I feel that's very challenging. I'm not confident.
Yeah. Now, this is an assumption we're going to make, if I think I'm correct. Your partners, so downstream from you, all of the ones you need to speak to, because I know your destination is Ireland, so your transport providers, your guest house, your B&Bs, I'm going to make a wild guess here and say they're not very responsive to technology. They need a phone call or they need an email. They're not willing to plug into a booking system or...
Correct. Yeah, it's all initially emails, and then some of them respond very, very quickly, or they come back with alternatives, phone calls if needed. There's no APIs, nothing like that.
So the constraint on your business is you're working with suppliers who are really small businesses, lifestyle businesses. Often they may have another job and they're running a guest house or they're running a minibus company or whatever. They have no real drive or passion to build that business much bigger, so they're not going to be very open to you going and pitching them lots of technology to make your life easier. They just want you inquiring and the booking. So that's puts limitations on your scaling for sure. But what it does mean is there's always going to be humans involved in that conversation. We can all sing about whatever AI can do and technology can do, but in that constrained environment, technology doesn't fix that because your suppliers are not willing to use the technologies. So you have to work with that constraint. I have some experience in that because I was Ireland and Scotland's very similar, and I had dozens and dozens of suppliers who were exactly the same, and we tried to get them a hook into technology, and I failed in virtually every single one. They just wouldn't do it, so it was back to phone calls, emails. The one thing I would say is, and obviously I don't know the scale of your business yet, but there's a point where a business gets to a certain scale where the human who's doing all that is hugely valuable. And it's costing the business money. You're having to pay them 35K or whatever it is to do it. But the human is hugely valuable because they're stopping lots of mess-ups happening.
Yeah.
And when you measure that human's cost on a five-day week or whatever you've got them running, and they're working 8 hours a day, 5 hours a week, 40 hours, if they're constantly chasing, closing, and the business is generating enough cash flow for that human is then immensely valuable to the business because they're not only addressing this issue, but all the technology will come on and say, oh, we can do it more efficiently. They can't because they don't know who the suppliers are and we do. But that human not just does that, they end up doing other things when they don't have to be doing that. You get better value of the human. So this is about building your team on the back of positive cash flow to generate positive cash flow to get in. And we all know, because we all lived through it, a business is not going to grow by not getting back to your partners, in your case, your resellers, quickly.
Yes.
Right? Speed is the number one thing in this world today. And getting back quickly closes deals and keeps people happy and keeps relationships going. Right? I'm guilty of it myself at the moment. There's 30-odd technology companies chasing me at the moment, and I haven't got back to them. Right? And that's not a good thing. If you're in the business of building partnerships and building, speed is probably the number one thing. Even if you're getting back saying, I cannot answer that now because of X, Y, Z. The other point you brought up there which is probably relevant to more than half of the community, is everybody's wanting prices in advance, but then they're sticking to the prices and all of your input costs are going up. Again, which is a real
challenge. Yeah. My margins are been reduced as costs are going up.
That is a major issue, and a lot of your operators are suffering it, particularly those in the B2B who have to give out a year's prices in advance. And then your input costs go up, and you're the one that gets squeezed, because the chances you're getting your partners to change price again are significantly significantly difficult, because they only want to change price once per year, because they're not just working with you, they're working with a range of partners in different countries all over the place, and the product team, pricing team just wants to go through that exercise once a year. There's not really much you can do about that apart from building in a margin by taking a look at the macro situation at the beginning. When you are doing your pricing for a year, you have to take a risk analysis and say, I would really like to give them this price, but I'm putting more on it because the world is telling me inflation's going to keep going at 4 or 5% or whatever it is. My suppliers keep coming back and changing my prices. And you've got to take a view on that and add a margin in that one time a year. For a B2C operator, it's much easier, because if your suppliers suddenly come by and change your B2C, you just go into your system, change your pricing to the retail end, and it's fine. But in this B2B partnership world, it can be the difference between making good money and not making good money. That's the hard reality. If you get squeezed at your supply end by a significant margin, and it never goes the other way. And once you've put your prices out, none of your suppliers come to you and say, oh, we'll take our prices down. So it's always going to go one way. The only way you can really deal with that is making sure you build in. Pre-COVID, for several years, there wasn't a real big reason to build in, because costs weren't going up all the time. And it was just, it wasn't flat, but I mean, it was 1%, 2% across your fuel, across your buses, across everything. Whereas now we all know, depending on your destination, it's anything between 5 and 20%. Cost inputs going in. So it is a case of squeezing out to get through 2024, get to your 2025 pricing point, which will be around about October or November this year, and really make sure you build in for next year. It's a barrier. Depending on what the world's doing. But there's elections in all the main countries this year, so I would suspect the world's not going to be the most stable place next year either. Okay. Back to Luska. Any more quick challenges? Let's do a quick challenge round before we start getting onto the interests and stuff. Opportunities. Challenges need batted down. Opportunities need exploited.
Yeah, another challenge is, I guess, with Sean and Edin has a similar ones. It's about the staff and, you know, financing new staff, adding more staff to the company. And in the meantime, I have the investment coming in, so... Actually, coming out, yeah.
So the hard news with staff for not every business, because it depends on the scale of the business, and we've got many operators that are turning over 8 figures, so they're off and running. But for small owner operators, and in that sub 2 million turnover operation, every time you bring a staff member on, unless your business is generating great cash flow, it's costing the owner of the business. Like, the owner takes a kicking. And that's, and I went through it multiple times. Every time I brought a staff member on, the owner takes a kicking. Until you get to the point where you've got cash flow in the business and you've got reserves in the business that can fund it.
How can we minimize those?
One, by looking at what staff comes on. So obviously the best staff you could ever bring on is somebody who can sell for you lots. Like, they pay for their sale 10 times over. They're also the hardest staff on the planet to find, the hardest ones to motivate, the hardest ones to keep. So, and to be honest, if they're really good at selling, they're not normally interested in tour businesses, because there's other business sectors that they're more interested in. So you're then looking for staff that takes work away from you, and then you have one more job when they take work away from you, is to go and sell more and do more business development as quick as you can to pay for them coming in. So you identify stuff that you're doing today or someone else in your team is doing that needs to be taken away by another member, And every time that's done, you need to do a calculation on that. That's what this is costing me, right? Therefore, I have to go and get X amount of business on top of my normal business to cover that so we can keep growing. Because otherwise, you could end up with a bigger staff team, but the business is not growing and certainly your profitability is not going to grow by that. You will have an easier life. And it's obviously, it's always a balance. Always. I tended to be overstaffed. And that was my choice, which meant I earned less. Because that's because I, part of my calculation was I needed a certain lifestyle rather than just putting more money in my pocket and working 7 days a week, 24 hours a day in the business. And some tour operators are happy doing that and it increases their net profit, which is great if that's what they want to do. But if you want the business to run without you and you disappear for X amount of time, you need to bring staff in. Every time you bring them in, the calculation needs to be done. And hopefully you've figured out how to pay for them before they come in. It can't be done on a whim and a hope that I'm going to generate X more business. Hopefully you're already in the pipeline of you're opening up new channels, you're opening up new partnerships, you've got your SEO working better, and hopefully you've got something doing that's going to pay for that staff member coming in. And this is not a rule, but I'm a big fan of bringing in people to take the workload away to leave the owner free to sell. And if the owner says, I don't like selling, you're in business. You need to grow a pair and start selling.
Yep.
That's it. Thanks, Sam.
Amazing Pete, as always, inspirational.
Yeah, some folk don't think that. Ask my wife.
It's good.
So, Eden, quick one for you. Quick fire, last challenge from you before we get on any opportunities.
Now I am elected to be the president of the Tour Guide Association of Bosnia and Herzegovina, Sarajevo. That's my new challenge, you know. I don't know why I needed that at some point. But I'm trying to grow some community. But sometimes people are just like, people just like, and that the challenge is how to attract them. You know, that's kind of interesting. Yeah, that's a new thing.
Yeah, so you can look at this two ways. That's a distraction that's going to cost your business because your time's away. Or look at it the other way. You're giving back to your destination. You're giving back to the education. Like Bosnia is a developing tourism company. So your business is off and running. You're getting some success with your business. And you're now investing in your country and in the other operators and the other guys. Not everybody's willing to do that. And that is a sign of leadership when you're willing to step up, even though it's going to cost your own business. Develop other businesses, it gets noticed. People take notice of that and it goes from one thing to the other. It needs to be controlled because you can end up doing too many things.
Yeah.
And then business suffers. But I don't think it's a bad thing by any means for a business owner who's got a business who's running successful, the cash flow is coming in and the bills are getting paid and you're making some money to then take on another aligned project that's going to enhance your destination. If it enhances your destination, by default, it enhances your company.
Yeah, of course.
And so but not everybody's cut out for that. Again, if you're listening to entrepreneurs, don't all think you have to go out and take over an association for a country. You don't. That's quite a big responsibility. But maybe in your city, maybe in your town, whatever your passion is, giving back is always a good thing if you have the bandwidth to do it. Yeah. Just don't do this because you feel like you have to do it. You have to have the bandwidth to.
Yeah, I'm happy to move it a little bit from the one frozen point, you know, just to do something with that, you know, and let's see. So far, I'm working like half an hour a day just on it, or a few hours a week just to see. But I think there's a lot of opportunities. They're not educated that much, they should get a little bit of exposure and to see, you know, and maybe, yeah, as you said, it will help me as well, because now I met all the tour guides, so I know all of them now. I at least there is a few more that they could get, maybe work with us, and yeah, they will be happy. They know about us more than they knew before. Yeah.
Sean, last challenge before we jump into the opportunities.
related to my first one, I suppose it's the squeeze on margin for the core products, the core tours that we're selling, as kind of input costs go up. And I suppose I don't pay too much attention to it because I feel like I can't react during the season. And then I'm not really certain how profitable the business is or will be. Will I be able to afford another staff member in 6 months' time? Or I can afford them now because I've got some cash coming in, but at the end of the season, can I really afford them? So it's the financial metrics and measures that I'm very poor at.
Yeah, that needs fixed. And if you've done the right thing, you went, I'm poor at, therefore it's getting someone who's either a piece of software and they issue books, but you need monthly accounts. You need monthly accounts that's showing the free cash flow going through and the profit, the gross profit going through, the cost going through and the profit going through, because all of these, like I said, up until 2019, these little 1% rises didn't make that much huge difference in a business. But since then, 5%, 6%, and a combination of all of these different percentages, the accumulation is dramatic on margins. And if you wait to the end of the year and find it, it can be quite shocking and quite demotivating. So you need to be, now, even though you can't do anything about it because you're locked into yearly contracts, you still need to understand it monthly as it's going, right? Yes. Because you're thinking ahead 6 months, 12 months, 18 months in your business all the time because of the style of business that it is. So you need to see it happening, because then you can start having discussions with your partners that when repricing comes, there will be price increases, and you can tell them why. Why? You can even show them why, because you can say, there's my input cost. They've all going up. That's why my prices are going up. So you've got to get a monthly set of accounts. It's easy in tour operating just to rely on a yearly set of accounts, because there's a period where the cash flow is flowing in. There's a period where it's not coming in, but everybody downscales a bit, so you've not got so many costs going out. And then it just all gets rounded off by the accountant at the end of the year. It's not a great way of managing a business. You really need, and I'm not even a fan of quarterly accounts, you really need to see it monthly. And it doesn't need to be anything complex. It's a spreadsheet built by a kind of bookkeeper who's analysed all your input cost, and it's all the invoices go in. And if the business is small enough, or you use a piece of accounting software, I can't remember what I used, Cash something or other. But without looking at it, you're not making it up as you go along, but you're sticking your finger in the air. Yeah. And for B2C, if anybody B2C listening, you can do something about it. So in some ways, it's even more urgent for the B2C crowd, because if they identify the issue, they can address it there and then. Therefore, they're getting rid of the pain before they get to the end of the year. Because if suddenly all your costs are up and your margin's gone down 4 points, you can get your prices up to allow for it in that month, at the end of the month, before you get to the end of the year. So it's actually even more important for B2C, because they can address it as you're going.
Yeah.
Let's get on to the nice stuff instead of all this challenging stuff. Why are we in this game? It's all good fun and we have a great time. Don't we, Luska? The opportunities.
Yeah. I'm not sure even if this is... the opportunity that I have is growing our boat operations to different locations without buying and spending a ton of money on the assets and having a great commission and margin out of it. And that's something that I already put in motion, and I'm really looking forward to, because most of our clients will go from Dubrovnik to Split and stop in between on Korčula on the islands, in between Split and Dubrovnik, and they are going on other tours around those locations. So I was like, okay, I have their email, I have their contact, I know what they are doing, and I want to take their money while they are here, right?
Yeah, so if I understood that correctly, you're expanding into different locations from Dubrovnik, but you're not buying the assets in the different locations. Therefore, that means you're working with partners.
Yes.
So you've got the customer contact. Because you've got decent marketing, you're getting the customer, and then you're managing the customer, looking after the customer, taking customer bookings, but then laying them bookings off to other suppliers. Is that correct?
Yes.
Right. So because you're an asset-based business, unless you've got endless deep pockets or endless funding streams, it's actually really difficult to scale an asset-based business up in multiple locations because it costs so much money. And then you have the same challenge that you've got in your own location of downtime of the assets when the season's not go. So if you're going to scale the business out, you don't really have much option in the short period than to do lots and lots of partnerships. And partnerships, depending on what partnerships, if you can get them the margin that makes sense, then your cost of acquisition of your customers, whether you've got them from SEO or social media, whatever it's cost you to get these customers, can you get them onto someone else's bots in your case, that they have a great experience, whereas that partner's happy with what you're paying them and you're earning enough money to make that justifiable to your business. The great thing about that is you can roll that. You can go from destination to destination to destination. Once you've got the machine working, you can keep it spinning and going. As long as you can get the partners, as long as you get the margin, you can keep that going. And in a destination like Croatia, Dubrovnik, where people tend to be coming on holiday, you do only get the one chance because they may not be back again for a long time. So it is your duty to sell them as much as possible. And if they are doing a tour from A to B to C, if you've got the trust initially, it makes sense for you to look after them in different locations. So scaling your business up and building your business out, I'm a big fan of working with partners. They don't necessarily need to be boat partners. I know you're in boating.
Yeah, not just the boat tours, but everything that comes along. Yeah.
Yeah, it's extra margin for you getting that customer. It's extra points of margin that's coming into your business with no operational cost or very low operational cost. It's got a cost of acquiring. But you're acquiring for your core business anyway.
Yes.
Instead of getting one booking for your core business, you can end up with multi-day booking or a multi-product booking because you are in different destinations. The hardest bit about that, certainly when I was doing it, I found was managing the partners. That to me was the hard. It wasn't the customers. It wasn't acquiring the customer. You're doing that anyway. You're just giving them a better opportunity, a better service. You're giving them a wider range of product experiences so they buy it.
Yep.
The hardest for me when I was doing it was constantly managing partners. And when you end up with a big range of partners, back to Sean's point, where some of these, the same as the suppliers, you're on the phone all the time managing these partners.
Technology for some of them is,
The technology for many of them is a phone. That is what it is. And you may do it for Messenger, WhatsApp, whatever, but it's a phone, and that's as far as you're going to get through them. So you've got to allow that cost into the calculation when you're doing that. But too many of our members keep their own business, their own tour operating, which has a limit because the destination they're in, they can't expand past where they get to. And by not taking partners on, it really restricts your business. Whereas if you take partners on, it just allows your business to go wherever you want to take it. Yes, there will be trouble. Yes, there will be some downsides of it. Yes, some of the partners will disappoint some of your guests at some time. That's life. We're in business. Can that happen? So obviously, you try to minimize it as possible. But if you don't do it, it's really hard to build your business out and create the sort of cash flows and revenues that you want.
But I think look for the opportunity that if you take on, say, Splits and Kotula and other parts of Croatia, you're much more valuable as a B2B partner to outbound tour operators who want to sell Croatia. If you only sell Dubrovnik, they need to find a partner that can do everything else. If you're selling
I think the challenge that I have, it's very, very super focused, and it's more of a problem than of, you know, we can't expand. And when you get a B2B partner, they are like, yeah, what can you do in this destination? You know, it's easier for them to handle with one sort. Yeah, in one point, I will need to become a DMC, micro DMC, right? Specialized.
That's the other thing is that
whatever is the jargon now. And
the blatantly obvious one is a lot cheaper to do this than go and buy lots more assets as well. And you can expand your business and get more revenue going through you without going and financing lots and lots more assets, which is a high risk strategy, and you really need to get the yields on assets. And going back to assets and to Ed in there, because I picked up on something we said earlier, and the cars are fine, the buses are fine, Are you logging every hour they're not working?
I'm sorry?
No, I'm talking to Eden. He mentioned earlier on that you had assets, cars and buses. Do you have any software or any tool tracking your asset management so you know how many hours they're working and how many hours they're not working?
Yes, we have that. We have GPS trackers. So I know every moment where the cars are. And yeah, but there's still more room for improvement. You know, I enjoyed a few days ago, there was a very nice podcast with Adam White and his usage of, how it's called? I always forget the name. Luksha, maybe you can remind me of the air.
Airtable.
Yeah. And it also gives very good opportunity to organize all of that. Assets, guides. So this is something that we should work on, but I that's my long-term goal. It's nothing short-term.
The way I looked at assets, particularly, and I'm not talking boats here because they're slightly different, but anything with cars or buses, you need a brain session in your business where everybody works there. How can we make this thing work 24 hours a day? And don't think just what your business is. Don't think tours, the experience you give your guests. You've got to open up your mind to your environment you're in, your locality. Right. And how can I make this bus get as many bookings in a 24-hour period, 7 days a week, 31 days a month, 365 days a year? Because if you've invested X amount of capital to buy that bus, it's your job then to make that bus work as hard as possible. And we all know with tourists, there's set seasons, there's set times where there are down times, but there's often lots of other avenues going on that you can use that bus and to make money rather than just park it up and become a dead asset for X period of the year.
Yeah. That's what I'm thinking all the time. And I, as you said, I also have a strategy of employing more than I need. So at the moment, I have one person that I don't have even, I don't know what to do yet, but it gives me more comfort and for my business development. So I can think about sales and all the time and thinking in that way, you know, what is the next thing we can offer? What's the next thing we can work on? But as an opportunity, now I see setting up and that's, I think, last chance because, you know, we have a huge brain drain in the Balkans. So to try to save these people to expand our offer and to set us as real Balkan DMC, but we are at the moment, you know, we are managing everything and we are selling it from Slovenia all the way to Albania. So it worked and it works. And just to, you know, that's what I see as opportunity. Yeah? And also another opportunity is that we are still considered as low cost destination, you know, in this inflation times, you know, when people are somehow squeezed, especially in the Western countries, you know, now Bosnia is still, our government did some great moves, so we have more flights. So, you know, news from a few days ago, you know, a city was completely packed and the February is breaking records, January is, it's all records all the time. So I hope that nothing will stop it, but you know, we are always thinking about COVID, you know.
So that opportunity, a low cost destination, if it was me, I'd be singing that from the trees. And because a lot of Europe has gone from being lowish cost to medium to high in a very short period of time. And a lot of travelers are used to going to certain destinations, and I hear it time and time again, they go again and they go, my God, this has got expensive. My God, this is going expensive. So people will be looking for better value. And across Europe, we all know how many Europeans travel about 3, 4, 5 times a year. They will be looking for better value destinations because the old ones are now not better value. They're the same prices from where they come from home. So to me, that's it's obviously a short term. How short that is, I don't know, because if Bosnia develops, it becomes Europe is Europe. Mostly the countries end up more or less costing they're the same. But you get a window of opportunity of X number of years. And I'm old and grumpy enough to remember going to the Czech Republic and Poland and everything when they just opened up after the war. And whereas one day's wages, I could live there for a month. Mm. Whereas I watched them come up to more or less in the same standard as the rest of Europe. So you do have, it could be a 10-year, it could be a 15-year, it could be a 20-year window. But you've got to maximize it. You got to maximize it. Again. And it's not, I'm not saying here you go advertise cheap. You don't.
No.
You advertise value. Can you're going to get experiences at great value of getting to your money that you're spending compared with other places.
Yeah, that's something that is right now happening to us. We had I never saw more British tourists here. As I started 12 years ago, and I never saw more. But we have now two companies, Wizz Air and Ryanair, flying here. So I hope that just everything will remain silent and calm, and that world will cool down, and that this doesn't affect tourism, because we are so sensitive, you know, in the streets.
Yeah, I wish I had the same confidence that everyone would calm down. I don't. I think it's going to get a lot wilder. But there you go. Sean, opportunities.
So expansion. And I'm looking at two routes. Either in the existing market, which is Ireland, diversify and grow that market. So, for example, self-drive tours are kind of quite popular. Yep. They'd be more profitable, potentially. I could collaborate on cycling, so self-guided hiking tours. So I could collaborate with a couple of existing partners in Ireland, or enter a new but adjacent market, so the UK, for example, with self-guided hiking. I know that would require more resources, and it's actually probably targeting direct clients more so, but then higher margin. But it's a much bigger market opportunity, and there is proven demand, even though it has the same challenges as Ireland. So I'm not sure which one to focus.
Yeah, it's that's always a quite difficult one. And I tend to lean on, be really, really confident you've maxed out your own destination before you go to another destination. Because you've probably heard me say this before, doing business in someone else's destination is always harder than doing a destination that you know inside out because you come from there. It just is. And that's no matter how you do the business in there, whether it's by partners, whether it's yourself going there with guys, however you do it is harder than another destination. So I'm a big fan of maxing out your destination, not just from your existing product and your existing experience, but is there a line product, like you just said there, self-drive tours by car. And a line product can double your business, because if you think your business is tapping out, again, from the self-guided walking, that self-guided cars may actually be much bigger than the self-guided walk. You just don't know until you test the market, until you go and do some research and get the total addressable market that you can get there. From a management and all the things you discussed before, that was in the challenges part, and that's a lot easier to manage in your own destination. The minute you're in someone else's destination, it's harder. So I'm a big fan of that. However, some destinations are small. Other ones on your doorstep are big, so there's a crossover. And there's the big thing, return bookings from clients. Now, it's not so relevant for you because you're working B2B, but if you do go into B2C, this is why many companies go from one country to another. They want to give the client a return booking, and the client often doesn't want to come back to the same destination again. You don't want to lose the client. It's cost you acquisition cost to get the client. So it pushes companies into going from destination, I need another destination, I need another destination. And that's in the B2C world. It's obviously slightly different from what you're doing. Just that fact, the B2C world, the fact you're can mainly B2B, maybe a huge opportunity is B2C in Ireland. But then you've got constraints on supply that you mentioned before, like accommodation, buses, and dumping another X thousand B2C clients on your already constrained resources. It's, all of this is a balance and challenging. If you decided to go to England, which is very close, I can tell you now there's virtually no constraint on the resources there. Right? So the resources are freely available in England. You come to Scotland and you will find exactly the same constraints that you're experiencing in England. Not enough accommodation in peak hour, peak season, not enough transport support in peak season.
Yeah.
All of the same things, getting restaurants, not operating at max. Well, they're operating over maximum, hence they're only open so many days a week. The lack of staff, all the constraints you're seeing, you will experience in Scotland. But England, you'll be able to expand much bigger there. But you're fairly new from just acquiring that business last year. I would be wanting to stick a couple of years to 3 years into Ireland, into your home destination, really cementing the systems down, cementing all your technology down, staff you take on, getting the system working, finding any aligned experiences in Ireland that works with it. And then if you're going to go into another destination, you go from a position of strength, not a position of I'm going because my constraints and my destination are forcing me to go.
Yeah, yeah. Very good.
It's you've heard me say before, shiny object. We see shiny objects that look, oh, that's interesting. We should go there and do that. And we do. But it's not always the best business decision. It's fun, but it's not always the best business. It's not always the best business decision. Okay, let's do a round robin to wrap up. What's the biggest opportunity, not for you, Liska, not for you personally in Croatia, what's the biggest opportunity you see for tour operators in the next couple of years in general?
Oh, that's a hard one. I guess making our lives easier with the technology. That's something what I see for our company and for the operators. AI helping us with operations and communications that usually would take time and phones and everything, and automating more. I know it will always be about the humans, but I would like to have our lives easier regarding automatization with the AI.
So the promise of technology to make your life easier. That has been the promise of technology as I walk the planet. I'm not quite sure it actually...
Okay, with the AI, I think the AI will probably shift that faster.
I would agree that technology makes life easier as a consumer. 100% I agree. When we are traveling as individuals, and being able to just book a flight like that, getting an Uber, and lots of things have been made easier with technology. When I look inside the back end of businesses, I'm not overly convinced that technology's made efficiency gains for sure, but it can be as challenging as opportunity. Anyway, technology, operators do need to adopt more of it for sure. If they're building the business out, if they're not building their business out and have no ambition to do it, there's no real reason to go down the technology route if you're not building your business out. Eden, what do you see as the big opportunity for the industry, tour operators 24, 25?
I think that the biggest challenge and opportunity, the biggest opportunity for general tour operators are creating unique experiences. Because tours that someone can do, they are maybe not going to grow. But experiences and some other values, some unique personal touch, some something that people can do, and that's the future. And it can push us worldwide easily. Yeah. So experience from one destination can become experience everywhere else.
Sean, your big opportunity for the industry in the next few years?
I think the different type of clients going on on tours. So previously it would have been kind of couples and friends and families, but now there's multi-generational people, there's skip generational, like there's grandparents and the grandkids, there are kind of single female travelers, there are other types of groups that are doing more, and they want more than just sitting on the beach, and they want kind of, I suppose, healthier, kind of more active. But not overly active, but the different combinations of possible clients coming together. So a family, a couple, a bunch of friends, a three-generational family, a six single women. So all those combinations, I think, are a big opportunity to repackage the same experiences or slightly different experiences to multiple kind of segments of kind of customers.
Cool. So I'll just finish off before we wrap up with the biggest opportunity I see for the industry going forward. And this is quite logical, but people don't really think about it. If you look at the demographics of the world, we've got 2 billion, not million, billion extra people about to enter traveling. Like, when you look at the demographics from all over the world, like, some demographics are not good. If you look at Germany's demographics, they're terrible. China's demographics are terrible. But there's other regions, the demographics are fantastic. And you have 2 billion extra people entering travel. They enter in the same way time and time again. They travel locally. Once they've got the economic wherewithal to travel, they travel locally. So once they take care of food, once they take care of shelter, once they take care of education, they start to travel. They travel locally within their own destination. They then travel regionally with countries around their own destination, and then they travel longer haul internationally. So you've got 2 billion of them coming down the next 20 years. So that's a guaranteed pipeline for our industry to build the scale of the industry. All of these people in that pipeline are today on social media, all of them. So these are not people who are not aware of what's going on in the world because they're all on social media. So they're already halfway educated into travel, even though they haven't traveled much here than now. And that's the other bit of the opportunity I was saying. We have a guaranteed pipeline for the industry, customers. Not many industries can say that, but we have. You've got a guaranteed way of connecting to them. Mm. They all use technology. They all use Google. They all use social media, whatever platform. We don't need to go through all the platforms, but they're all there looking for content and media, and you're the people that can give that. So the ability of small operator in Bosnia or Ireland or Croatia or any other of the 180 countries that Tour Pros got members in can contact the customer anywhere. Right? That is a huge, huge opportunity for the industry. Because you're going to be, this industry is going to double in size, more than double in size, just with the scale of that. Smaller opportunity in the near term, this next 10 years, doesn't suit every operator, but you really need to pay attention to people like me and my age, because they're all retiring, and they've all got money. Well, not all of them, but a lot of them have got money, right? Because of the generation they went through and started working hard in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, their asset prices went up, their shares went up, their pensions went up, the property went up. They're retiring now with money in the bank, and they're fit and healthy, and they want to spend that money. So unless you're a total dedicated tour operator for the 24 to, I don't know, what XYZ or whatever brand we've given them now, grumpy old gits are a great market because they've got lots of money. And that's a 10-year window, 15 at the max, right? And then they'll pass that money on their kids if they haven't spent it all, and then it spins round again. But you probably never see a demographic again in history that has as much wealth as it's about to be released into the market over the next 10 years. The demographic coming after them has not accrued the same wealth. And we don't know if it's all going to pass down. We don't know that. Again, it may do, but if it doesn't, that is a huge opportunity. So I would be creating experiences and tours for that demographic for a 10-year window to maximize profit. And they like quality, and they're willing to pay for quality. Well, right, we've just gone slightly over time, so let's wrap this up. Thanks very much, Pluska. Thanks, Sean. And thanks, Ian, for all your time today. And hopefully our listeners will get some value out of that. Anybody who was listening wants to contact Pluska, Sean, Ian, either to be a partner, either to discuss what they were talking about or just to say hello, please do. We're a community after all, and it's all about connecting and helping each other. Thanks, guys.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that's today's episode. If you need show notes from today's conversation, make sure you go to tourpreneur.com, and there you'll also find so much more, including our free course on Google, Things to Do Leading to More Direct Bookings and More Exposure on Google, available again at tourpreneur.com/Google.